Welcome back to Talkville, folks. We're excited to be here. We always are. This is the Ultimate Smallville Rewatch Podcast. And each week, as you know, we go back, way back. We watch every episode. I didn't see most of the episodes. We remember some things we don't remember.
Now, hold on a second.
What?
Don't be distracted by Michael's calm demeanor.
Why?
He texted me last night and said, Smallville's back. The next two episodes are awesome. And then he comes on air like this, and it sounds like he just smoked a big J, which is great. More power to you. But Michael's very excited about this. Don't let his voice fool you.
Listen, I will say that I watched these two, and watching such, let's say, I don't want to say shit. That's not a good word. Let's just say I was watching episodes that were subpar, and now watching two episodes that were written.
Your text was literally
well written.
Smallville's back.
Yeah, that's what you said. Felt like that. I felt like, okay, this is worth talking about. Look, we're excited. We're going to discuss it with you. Our socials are, it's important that you follow us and keep this podcast going. Like these little things, I know you enjoy it. You just want to get into the show, but if you're here and you want to keep watching and supporting the show, the best thing you could do is not only listen, but follow us at Talkville Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, at Talkville Pod on Twitter. And if you didn't get a chance to call into our hotline and leave a question for this episode, make sure you do for the future episodes. All right, like all this info and more is down in the show's description. You can watch on YouTube. You can do all that stuff. And more importantly is we have a Patreon account. Patreon gives back to the show. It really keeps us on the air because we don't have tons of advertisers yet. And in order for us to keep going and paying everybody, we need to keep this patron going. You patrons are awesome. You get back to the show and we love you. And there's my dog, Blanche.
I thought I closed the door.
Well, you didn't.
What up, B?
Hi, Blanche. She's so cute.
What up, B?
Hi, B. You're fine. You're so cute. Your breath's terrible.
Blanche would love Rosie Prime.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be best friends.
They got to meet. All right, look, that's it. Show's description. Watch on YouTube. You can watch anywhere. You're listening as we speak. Without further ado, let's get into it. Season 2, Episode 7, Lineage. Title Lineage. November 5th, 2002, era date. Director, makes perfect sense, Greg Beeman. Writers, perfect sense. Story by Al Goff, Miles Miller. Teleplay by Ken Biller.
It's
going to
be a good one. Patrick Cassidy, what a champ.
Guest star, Patrick Cassidy as Henry Small, Blair Brown as Rachel Dunleavy. This was fun. We're going to get into it. The Kents get thrown for a loop.
Wait a second.
What?
Wait a second.
What?
Was Rachel Dunleavy named after
Barry Dunleavy? I don't think so. He wasn't there yet in season two, was he?
Once again, another thing.
Barry Dunleavy
don't know.
Was a DP on our show, one of them with Glenn Winter, and they rotated, but I it might have been. The Kents get thrown for a loop when a woman breaks her promise of silence with Lionel Luther and returns to Smallville to reunite with who she thinks is her long-lost son, Clark Kent. The episode kicks off with Clark running late for school using his powers to toast bread, super speed to Smallville High before he's late. I love this. We don't see this a lot. And it kind of just says, okay, we know what he does. Really quick, we're done. It kind of lingers on it. And it's fun. It's what we want to see. We don't get to see him do a lot of superhero stuff like flying, obviously, but it was neat. As the Kents leave, a strange red-haired lady emerges on the farm, enters the house, and looks at their family pictures. In the halls, Pete, Clark, and Chloe are talking about Greek mythology. Chloe reminds Clark that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. As Pete and Chloe leave, that same woman from the farm approaches Clark and tells him that she's his mother. I thought this was a really good reaction from you.
By the way, at school, like at your school locker. Like she's there's no patience.
She's a little
this.
Look, she's a little out there, obviously. This woman's a little intense, a lot intense, and we find that out more as the episode goes on. Oh, remind me about the axe. I gotta talk about that. Clark tells his parents that night that they warn him to steer clear. And they warn him to steer clear. Then Clark goes on to ask him about the adoption agency that handled his adoption, the same one Chloe uncovered.
Okay, so this was cool to me because all the scenes during the duration of Smallville about Clark's adoption and how it worked, I was never in those scenes, really.
Right.
Or ever. And so I'm kind of watching this episode being like, yeah, how did that play out? How did that work out? And then you get the Luther thing, which we're going to talk about. Like, what? I had a lot of questions I wanted answered in the best way.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also agree that it was cool because you're finding them out Ask Clark's finding them out for the most part, with the exception of a few things that can't be told. That night at the Talon, the Kents meet this woman, Rachel Dunleavy. They tell her there's no way Clark can be her son, but she's adamant that she's done the research on where her son Lucas was placed, and Jonathan tells her to beat it. At school, Clark breaks a bond of privacy with Chloe by going through her emails and finds out that she's been communicating with this lady. He blows up on Chloe for digging, and then throws a couple of low blows by noting how Chloe's mother is not involved in her life. And I really like this. Now, you weren't right for going through her emails, but you know what? She's like Richard Pryor with just prying in everybody's life. I mean, it's like, come on. It's annoying after a while. It's like, so anyway, this is what happened, and blah, 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 and your mother, and your... And shut up! Beat it! Put an egg in your shoe.
Well, I also think that the story thing here is like addressing the idea that when she, like a dog with a bone, she can't not go down these avenues for a story. She can't. And maybe she shouldn't. I mean, it adds for good drama. I don't know how Clark ever got into her emails, really, but I don't think that's the issue.
Yeah, but you know what I'll say is sometimes there's somebody in your friend group who's always saying something and always commenting about something and blah, 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 and feels like whatever. And sometimes you have to say, hey, do me a favor. Shut the fuck up. You don't have
time
to.
Time out. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Time out. I've heard
it. Knock it off.
I've heard it like, hey, that's none of your business. Okay, whoa, sorry. That was my fault. I apologize.
Mind your business.
Mind your own business. As Clark leaves, we find out the adoption agency was founded by Lionel Luther. Later on, Rachel, a complete stranger, gets a meeting with Lex Luthor to try and get him to talk with the Kents on her behalf. Lex tells her to beat it, but then she tells him that she was having an affair with Lionel Luthor. She became pregnant, and Lionel forced her to give the child up. This is now the second affair that we've learned Lionel has had while his wife was dying.
By the way, only the second. At this point,
there's many.
The one is like, oh, maybe it's a mistake. When you hear two, you're like, well, there's two. There's more than that. I don't know.
You're right. Where there's smoke, there's fire, my friend.
You didn't learn the first time, bro.
Mm-mm. As we learn that Lex and Clark may have been half brothers, how interesting was that? That ride
that was
in the truck.
Riveting.
In the truck with like me, I'm like passed out. I don't really remember anything. I've been injured by the meteors, and you're just a smiley, happy young kid. And you know what's funny is like you always talk about age and stuff, but you know, we don't like you look like, okay, he's a little bit older of a boy and he's more of a child, but a couple years they could sort of be friends. It makes sense.
Kids and adults, it doesn't matter. It's that I don't even want to make up an age, but there's something about the college to 30-40 where people actually get care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not talking legal stuff. Remember, I think Lex is probably 5 years older than you.
So let's call Al. I thought he was 20 years older.
Hold on, I'm gonna call Al. I'm tired of this.
How much older is Lex? I mean, listen, Clark's in high school, a freshman in high school.
This is sophomore year, right?
Probably gone through college, and he's 2 or 3 years into running companies. So
he's probably in a meeting with Tim Burton. You know, they're getting ready for season 2 of Wednesday. They're prepping, I'm sure. It's a big show.
I wish I could see the look on Al's eyes when he looks at his phone and sees that you're calling.
Hey, Al.
Hey.
You're on the podcast right now for just a minute. We just want to talk to you for a minute. I know you got Wednesday and you're doing big movies and things, and you always have time for us, and that's why you're such a great guy. But listen to this. We've been deciding. I think, you know, Tom always talks to me about how odd he thinks it is that Lex is so much older. I only think he's like 5 years older, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Lex was like 5 years older than Clark.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah. What's wrong with that?
I think Lex is like in the show, like 21, 22 or something like that. So,
Yeah. Well, thanks, Al.
Yeah. Clark, you look like you're 16, 17.
I mean, look, we obviously got, obviously, you know, it's in the proud tradition of, you know, of Grease and West Side Story. You know, we have in the, you know, it's the classic, you know, you guys are playing high school and young adults, you know, 10 years older than you probably are. But that's, as we all know, that was certainly the vogue of the early 2000s.
Right.
So
that's life.
You know,
we're going over, this is good that we actually called you because after a couple of duds of, shows, we just watched two that I really liked and their Lineage and Ryan. And
oh yeah,
they're just excellent. And it's like, you got Beeman and you guys are really involved with the story and everything. It just makes perfect sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Those are both fantastic episodes, right? I think before it was like I know you had the one episode that we actually shot in season one and aired in season two. And then I think at the time when we, because season two had, we, you know, everybody watched the reruns back when they had reruns. Everybody had caught up with the show over the first summer. It was a, obviously a hit in its first season. The people that hadn't watched it over the summer. So when we came into season two, our ratings really jumped. And it kind of, I think in that first run of episodes, because, you know, we had like the opener and there was like Red Clark and there were some really good ones. I think Pete Learns the Secret, you know, all of those, like some big moves in those early episodes. And then I think, interestingly, I think Lineage might have been our highest rated episode of that season.
Wow.
Just by viewing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, look, this has been, this has been an Al Goff moment. This was great. I love you. We love you. And, you know, we'll keep trying you throughout the series.
Excellent. Thanks, dude.
See you, buddy. Bye.
Bye.
You know,
Al Goff, folks.
This just freaked. That guy's got a brain that I don't have, and I don't think you have. I mean, I love your brain.
Speak for yourself.
The fact that we, by the way, fans, we don't prep him for this.
No, I just called him. You know, I just called him. He had no idea I was calling him. Yeah, that's what I do.
And he can go back and access those files in his brain. I mean, listen, we're literally telling you we're watching a show that we don't really remember shooting. And then we talk to Al, and he can recap everything. So...
Clark rushes back to the farm to confront his parents on Lionel's involvement in his adoption, realizing the jig is up. Martha and Jonathan tell him the truth. The day of the meteor shower, Jonathan helped rescue Lex and Lionel. In return, Lionel offered Jonathan a favor. This was great. This was really cool stuff. I love seeing younger Lionel, and he seemed kind of like disgusted, repulsed by Lex.
Here's my favorite thing about that scene. All the emotion adds up on both sides. It's totally great. And Lionel says, I don't even know your name. This is Jonathan Kent. Lionel doesn't even ever vocalize his name. He waits till he hands over his business card. What a power move.
You know what's funny?
He never says his own name.
You know what's funny, though?
In that scene.
Is I saw vulnerability in John Glover, in the character. That was, it was a different kind of vulnerability. It was like he was really, maybe he had these ideas for Lex and now he's going to be bald, or is he damaged? Is he disfigured? And that's what he was worried about. He wasn't necessarily worried about his actual Lex's well-being. And it was kind of disturbing, but I don't know. I couldn't put my finger on it.
I actually thought he was caring, like he almost had a reckoning with himself that I really do care about my son and you saved him. So thank you. So you and I both saw it actually two different ways.
Yeah. And also, yeah, I mean, well, we'll get into it. After this, the sheriff rolls up, tells Jonathan that because Rachel is claiming to be Clark's mother, she's petitioning for a DNA test. So Clark gets mouth swabbed. And the Kents plot their next move, wondering what strange DNA results they'll see and whether they should steal the sample. Lana goes to visit Henry Small, her potential new father. He's despondent and plays off his relationship with her mother as ancient history before telling her to beat it. That night, Jonathan sends out, and I thought that was a really good moment with Kristen. It was, you know, it's just so sad that because that happens all the time. I don't want you in my life. That was the past. I don't, please stop. I have a family. Get out. Oh my gosh. That night, Jonathan sends out Clark and Pete, two high school sophomores, to test it to the testing facility so that Pete can contaminate Clark's DNA results with his saliva. Now, the only thing I didn't like about this, I get it.
The line, I need your spit.
No, that didn't bother me. You know what bothered me? You breaking into it. So when they see that, aren't they going to see that someone broke into these? Why didn't they think of that as, you've been this whole thing. What you should do is make it look like it wasn't broken into or tampered with. Because then they'd ask for your, it just bothered me. The believability was just like someone didn't think about that. That's the only moment in this episode that bothered me.
Yeah, because you're right. If it's someone broke in, whoever it was.
Yeah.
The evidence is tampered, not admissible. We have to redo the samples. And then we have another episode about the same thing.
Yep. Talkville is brought to you by AG1. Tom and I talk about this all the time. If you want to get healthy, if you want to feel better, if you want to have energy and focus, this is what we take and it helps us. And we talk about it all the time, but AG1, Talkville and AG1, they go hand in hand together. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should be at least simple. And that's why for a couple of years now, we've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in with water once a day, every day, and it helps us feel I don't know, it helps me feel alive, I guess you could say.
Yeah, well, I just took a weekend vacation with my family, and I don't know, something was going on, and I realized I hadn't brought my AG1, and when I got home, I literally drank one, and I was like, oh, this is what I was missing. And that's the truth.
Well, really, look, was. I mean, what people don't realize is, you know, instead of taking all these vitamin pills every day, and I hate swallowing pills, AG1 helps cover my bases with high quality ingredients like pre and probiotics, which we all need, adaptogens, antioxidants, and whole food source nutrients. I know that if I drink it daily, I'm going to feel that extra boost. And that's what Tom was talking about. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/talkville.
That's drinkag1.com/talkville. Check it out, and the travel packs are worth it.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
As the Kent Farm, at the Kent Farm, more of the adoption story starts to unwind. We learn that the Kents were forced to enlist Lionel for help after making up the story of adopting Clark. We also find out that the reason why it was kept a secret is because Lionel forced the adoption of his bastard son, Lucas.
I totally, but I missed that. I walked away thinking Lionel started this company. The only person that was adopted was Clark, and then it was closed. I didn't catch the Lucas connection. I didn't. Wow, that's cool.
And Lucas comes back, right? There's an episode where Lucas comes back.
Well, that's what they're getting at.
That's
the end,
what they're,
right?
They're talking about at the end. Exactly. Later at Luther.
Is that the name of the episode, Lucas?
I guess so.
I don't remember.
Later at Luther Manor, Rachel arrives to question Lionel on what he did to alter the results of the DNA test, not believing that Clark isn't Lucas. Lionel's confused on why she's breaking the paid agreement they had for her to be silent about the adoption. Lionel goes to express regret that she never finished her treatment in the psych ward. This was really, oh, he was such a bastard. Like him being so manipulative with her and playing with her face. I think he almost tried to put his finger in her mouth. It was repulsive and dark, and you could see what a bastard he is.
You could also see her almost melting into it, but trying to avoid it. Like that one little thing, there's so much going on. Yeah, I agree.
Oh. Later on, before Lex is able to peel out of the Luther parking garage, he is stopped by Rachel before he's able to find out what she wants. She tranquilizes him. That night, Lana talks to Clark up in his loft. Clark reveals that Chloe was digging into his adoption and how Rachel showed up.
By the way, the tranquilizing moment, sorry, it's slightly delayed. I thought it was funny in the car where you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What would you do in that situation? I just kind of laugh because I know you.
Yeah, all I could think about was just trying to, whoa, stop what you know. I don't know. My glasses again. God bless. That night, Lana talks to Clark up in his loft. Clark reveals that Chloe was digging into his adoption and how Rachel showed up out of nowhere claiming to be his mother. Lana admittedly tells him she did the same thing with Henry Small. Nice scene with you.
That was a good moment when Clark said, I mean, who does that? Who just barges in and does this? And Lana's like,
well, I did.
Yeah.
The next day, we see Rachel's kidnapped Lex and bound him in the house that she purchased using Lionel's money. She tells him that either Lionel is going to tell the truth about the adoption or he'll learn the pain of losing a son. Lionel hears this news and pulls together a press conference to make an announcement live on TV. Is he going to save his son? No. He says he will not back down to the demands of a kidnapper. And this sends Rachel into a tirade, causing her to pick up an axe, prepare to kill Lex. And I love this one. She grabbed that move she makes was so psychotic. It was so misery. I loved that. She really scared me. She looked like a crazy freaking person. Before she swings, Lex breaks free enough to kick Rachel away. However, this causes him to fall back and knocks himself out. But Clark.
Okay. Yep. Okay, pause there because I have to ask you a question.
Sure.
It sure looks like you're tied to a chair and you fall over and you hit the ground. Was that you or did they put your face on the stunt double?
I don't remember.
Because
I don't remember that. I don't remember. It could have been me.
There's a very famous actor right now who was in a hostage scene and got kicked over in a chair and wanted to do his own stunt. And now has like a leak in his spine. And that's exactly what you just did in that scene. I would have never done that. You could do that in cuts. Like,
yeah.
Tommy in a chair, kick me over. No way. Yeah, you want me to jump over something or kick something or punch something? Fine. Fall over backwards? No way.
I don't know if I did it. I really don't remember.
That's how you get concussed.
Thank you.
Well, maybe that's why.
Clark super speeds in the house just in time to stop Rachel before she takes another swing at Lex. He dies in front of the axe, breaking the blade against his chest. After seeing this, Rachel finally comes to grips with the fact that Clark is not her son. Rachel then gets readmitted to a psychiatric clinic, making Clark's secret safe and sound, apparently.
Okay, so that's another funny thing. I love how much you love about this episode because it sounds like I keep shitting on it. Oh, I hit it with an axe and it broke. Oh, he's not my son? That was quick.
Well, he has these superpowers. He's obviously from another, you know, whatever.
Well, she's nuts. And the good thing is, as Martha says, no one's going to believe anything she says anyway. So.
Yeah. As the Kents recover from the incident in their barn, Jonathan has a flashback revealing why he has so much resentment towards Lionel. Because Lionel used the false adoption as blackmail to get the Kents to convince the town to let Lionel buy up property. That bastard. And that night, Henry Small returns to the town after having a change of heart, reveals that he may be Lana's father after all and is willing to find out. The episode ends with Lionel telling Lex about the situation with Rachel and his bastard son and how the son, Lucas, unfortunately died before his first birthday. Well, Lex leaves the room and Lionel opens a locket with a picture of him and his son, Lucas, who seemingly did not die.
You know, the Lionel and Jonathan thing, I kind of tracked it a little bit where Lionel says, thank you. You did something that you didn't have to do for my son. If you ever need anything, Jonathan reaches out. Lionel goes, that's great, but now I need something for you. Like, what a snake.
I mean, he really shows, I mean, this is a really, we see a lot of the dark side of Lionel, as bad as he can be. We really see it like behind closed doors. We see it where only the person and that he's conniving or manipulating sees. Usually he's very, you know, what's the word?
Arm's length, perhaps?
Yeah, well, usually usually he's a little more subtle. But like now we see the lack of subtlety and the darkness. Yeah, it's really what we also learn is like, what, you know, you're really starting to believe that, wow, look at Lionel. Lex didn't have a chance. What a great story, because there was a superhero element. There was this dark side element. Could these guys have been brothers? What if, you know, Clark had a different mother? There was all these different variables, and Lana and the B story with her father, it's something that people can relate to. I just felt like it was easy to watch. There was some really gratifying scenes.
It was good movement, good pacing. It made me wonder who Lionel's father was.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Because a lot of trauma is multi-generational. I mean, we can go down that rabbit hole, whatever. But yeah.
Lineage is the line of descendants of a particular ancestor. This episode deals with the lineage of Lex Luthor, Clark Kent, and Lana Lang. Patrick Cassidy, Henry Small, had a small multi-episode role as Leslie Luckabee on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. The character was supposed to be Lex Luthor's son.
He was a great guy to have on set. He kind of came in, did his thing, was great with everybody, great energy. I was like, wow, this is like a real actor.
Yeah.
I remember that. He's just had it. Handsome as hell, no question. But he was a great collaborator.
I saw him in Blood Brothers. The Cassidy brothers were on Broadway. And it was my favorite musical of all time. I just remember talking to him about it. And he was a lovely guy, man. He was doing a lot of commercials mostly, and he wasn't getting a ton of acting stuff. So he was, you know, he was definitely excited to be on there, and he was a good actor. He is a good actor. It was fun to have him around. I'll keep him cool and I'll keep him warm in the winter. And where's Annette?
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Please welcome. She has an Inside of You mug because she was on my podcast.
And I'm drinking out of it.
Yes, Annette O'Toole.
Hello. Hello. It's so good to see you guys.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, sweet darling. How are you?
I'm lovely. I'm so happy. And I'm so happy to see you. Thank you.
That makes me so happy that you're happy. That's fantastic.
Annette, we are doing the we're doing the episode called Lineage. I don't know if you remember it. But Lineage is...
No, God, I don't remember any of them.
Well, hang on, you might. Same. It was a really good one. First of all, we always sing your praises. It's unsolicited. It's one of these things that you just say because it's just so apparent. And we learned so much from you. You were always on. You were always believable. You're always in the moment. And
you always did so much with so little.
Yeah.
And I think you know what I mean.
I do. And as time went on, I had less to do. So I did, I made as much as I could of what was given to me without going overboard. And they took care of that because they'd edit things out. I was always kind of in the beginning and the end of scenes. So if they were running long, they'd cut either way. And I knew that it was okay. But as Mr. Glover says, it's the golden handcuffs. You know, we go up there, we're tied to this thing, but it was wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to have been a part of, to know everybody. And so many people responded to it. There are people who come up to me and they say, our family didn't do anything together except sit and watch Smallville. Uh-huh. And that makes me so happy. Because a lot of times what we do doesn't feel important or necessary sometimes. It's like, I like to put on different clothes and pretend I'm somebody else. You know, it's just very vain. But it's not. You know, that's part of it.
Yeah.
But it's also just, it helps people, especially right now where, especially through COVID, my God, crazy. Me included. But anyway, I'm glad to talk to you and see your faces and be here today.
I love it. We're doing this episode called Lineage, and it really is like,
yes, tell me about it.
This woman comes along and she says she's Clark's mother. She says she's Clark's mother and that her and Lionel or something had an affair and we find out.
Oh my God.
And then we see that, Jonathan helped Lionel and Lex when Lex got in the meteor shower and they ride in the truck together and there's this whole thing and Clark has to give his DNA test and they break in to steal the tests and all these things sort of unravel. And
you and Schneider had a very mature response to this one because you guys knew that you found this kid in a spaceship. You were there.
Exactly.
And here comes this woman talking about Luthers and this and that. And you're like, we're going to handle this as mature as we can and then tell this woman to F off, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
But what I loved is from both you and John, you got this like mother bear, dada bear about Clark, which I think everybody loved to see.
Yeah. Well, we were fiercely protective and we had to be. And there's so many questions that come up. I was always wondering about taking him to a doctor, and a school. Like, why didn't school ever want vaccination records? You know, all these things, because I had kids, young kids at the time. So I was thinking, why doesn't anybody bring this up? But I guess it's a small town. They do things differently there. And if you look into it too much, it's like nothing would make sense.
Yeah, I think it's probably everything was falsified. It was sort of like, this is when he was born. This is where he was. This is his adoption papers. None of it's real, but you're hoping it sort of stands the test of the time, which it doesn't really. Some people question it.
So Michael, do you watch the shows again? Is that how you know so much about them? Or do you read the scripts? Or how do you
go ahead,
do you
Tom?
Remember?
Why don't you tell them what I do?
So, Annette, here's the quick thing. So there was one episode we did not long ago where I started off the podcast, which is I have no recollection of ever being here. I don't have any stories for you because I'm the color commentary in a sense, because I watch it, I remember these things, which I wouldn't remember unless I watched it again. Michael, never watched the show, nor did he read the scripts other than Lex. So he's really watching it for the first time. And so this is sort of what our podcast is about. But having you here is so great because the episode we just watched was actually horrible on so many levels. And then we found out it was actually shot in season one and then placed in season two and all these other things. So Michael is now revamped in a sense that this episode and the next one called Ryan, which I'm sure you don't remember.
I do remember Ryan because I love that little boy.
He was great.
All right. So
Ryan Kelly.
We'll call you next week about that.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. But like now what Tom was going to say is now I was like, I text him in the morning. I said, Smallville's back. Like, these were good episodes. I'm ready to talk. Because some fans go, Rosenbaum shitting on the show again, because I'm very honest. I'm like, I love it. And then I'm like, eh. And then I'm like, no, you know, but I'm honest. Yeah. And this is how I feel watching it. And I'm proud of it and all that. But like, you can't have people just going, yes, it was 100%. We give it all the roses. And it was all because it's like, you know, it's TV. It's not easy to make 22 episodes a year. What do you remember? Back to you. What do you remember mostly about just being up there, being on set, at least in the first couple of years?
I remember how long it took to get everywhere. You know, yeah, we're sitting in a car all the time. And I, you know, when I first got up there, I didn't realize I was a self-drive.
No,
I got
one did.
There. Nobody told me. I got there. They said, okay, your call's 5 a.m. out at the Smallville, you know, house way out.
It's an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, no traffic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, okay, can this lovely guy picked me up at the airport who had driven me before on shows in Vancouver. And I said, oh, can he be my driver? They said, oh, no, you're self-drive. I said, what? I'm not kidding. I went into a panic because I thought, how am I going to get there? I don't have a car. All the rental, you know, and it like, I can't remember who our first AD was at the time. It was somebody very sweet who said, oh, my God, I will come pick you up. We had no idea. But that was my manager's fault or my agent's or something. Nobody freaking told me.
I don't think anybody knew.
So,
we didn't know.
Yeah. So after that, I remember Adria. I hired Adria, who went on to marry Eric Johnson. They have a child. And they
that's
seem
right.
to still be very happy. So that's wonderful.
Good, all because of you. All because you didn't have a driver.
That's right. These things happen. And she also drove John Glover for a while. And then finally, I just said, this is stupid. I can drive myself. So I finally did. But I was just petrified about going out to this place I didn't know in the dark with no lights anywhere, pitch black. And it's my nightmare. It still is. I hate having to go to locations I don't know where I am. So I remember that. I remember being really cold most of the time. You know what I remember? Because I kind of...
Your hands always cold.
Oh, God.
By the way, I will die on a sword saying that your heart is the biggest and warmest I've ever been around. But your hands were always frigid.
Crazy. Not just that. Most of my body, I'm cold all the time. What was I going to tell you about? What I remembered. Oh, my God. Tom, you made me forget.
No, you were talking about how you finally drove and then it was always cold up there. And then...
Oh, I know it. So we were doing that, the whole Rutger Hauer, we call it Rutger Hootger.
Yeah.
Mr. Insanity. And I remember, so this is one of the standout memories for me. He was freaking smoking in the barn.
Yeah.
He'd stand right outside the barn and smoke. And people were telling him, please, oh, you know, they were so scared of him. Please,
and the barn is indoors. This is a barn.
Yeah, and there's already horrible smoke from the machines in there.
Yeah, all this smoke and all this dust and bugs and spray and stuff they'd put on. And it could have gone up at any second. So Christine O'Connor, our amazing hairdresser.
Oh, God bless
her. Who has since passed. God bless her.
I know she has. But she told Rutger Hauer, she said, you can't do that. Go outside. Go outside. Because she was a smoker. And they always made her go outside.
Yeah.
So she was really angry about that. I love that she told him off and made him go outside.
Yeah, he was a piece of work.
Oh, my God. He was, yeah. And you had to do a lot more than. But I remember silly things like that. You know, I remember walking into the Kent kitchen, you know, timeless time, you know, okay, what are we doing now? We're canning this day and there's all this beautiful light coming through the golden peaches that we're canning. And, you know, there was always something we were doing. The thing I was most sorry about was that I didn't get to work with Christopher Reeve. Mm. I thought, wait
Me
a
too,
minute.
Yeah.
You've got the original Superman, the original Lana Lang.
Yeah.
Here.
You use that, and it seemed to me like it would be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'm
you know
so
what?
That's, hurt by that.
I never thought about that, but from a story point of view, you know, I'm coming up with this now, but, you know, Clark has to go meet Dr. Swan, which is Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, Jonathan can't or won't, but his mom goes. That would have been...
Yeah.
That would have been epic. That would have been great.
It would have been amazing. And it was funny when it was all kind of being... put together, I know because of Chris's condition and stuff, they had to do all this stuff. But I thought, this is the only time I'm ever going to get to see him again. And I just personally would have loved to have seen him again. He was so kind to me during the shooting of Superman 3. He couldn't have been more generous, sweet, funny. He was just, I mean, I walked into that situation because basically because Margot was asking for too much money or they were mad at her for some reason. I don't know why. But they said, okay, we're going to use Lana Lang now. And so, but she was great. I came on the set. I had two scenes with her. She was fantastic. Richard Pryor, who was, you know, in the movie, was so, everybody was so sweet. The only one who wasn't terribly sweet was Richard Lester, director.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, he wasn't rude or mean. He was just kind of not interested in anything I was doing. And I was like trying all this stuff. And I kept feeling like every day was a test with him, and finally just like, oh, okay, she's fine. Didn't pay any attention to me at all.
It's so interesting that you say this because time and time again, I've experienced this when I was on Smallville with you and John and Michael and everybody else, and I didn't know anything. And I was watching how you guys operated and treated people. And I could very clearly see people who I didn't appreciate how they treated me. And I would get from you all, this is how I want to treat people. Like, you all taught me that.
Yeah.
Nah. And so for you, because we've all been in situations with bad people, and there's very few bad people.
Very
few. If you know what I mean. There are actually very few.
I agree. Yeah.
But you can only learn how to treat people from people like I had. I was surrounded by wonderful, beautiful talent. Oh, I always say, I used to think Michael was so talented. That's why I paid attention to him. That's like our running joke because he knows I love it. But like I was safe. I was safe to learn. And I thank you for that.
Well, and you were amazing. I talk about it all the time too, about you, that you were like a sponge. You got thrown into the deep end and you just absorbed all that deep water, you know, and you were so wonderful when you directed. I was so proud of
you. Thank you.
And you were so great. You just were so supportive. And kind of by that time, you know, everybody knew each other so well and we just wanted to help make your that time easier for you. But then it was like, we don't need to do that. He's just fine. He knows it. You were right in the middle of it. You saw everything, every department. I would watch you to watch other people and be interested in it, you know, because a lot of people have that opportunity and they don't take it. But you certainly did. And so it was really,
and
really,
you were awesome. I just remember, you know, like you take me aside or you call me or something and just like, and you know, it meant so much because I was still young and I was like, this was the biggest role I had, the most dramatic. And it was just like hearing from you saying, oh, I just want to say we were watching the show and you are whatever, you would say something and it would just mean more than you ever knew. I'd be like, thank you so much. But like, it really, I was like, huh, Nano 2 thought I was awesome.
Well, thank you.
You know, it really helped my confidence.
I'm very glad it did, but I was just telling the truth. I wasn't like trying to help so much. I was just telling you what I saw. But I came up at a time, I was talking about this with someone yesterday. I don't know why exactly, but I was really lucky because when I really started studying acting seriously when I was about 17, I come from a musical comedy world. So I had a real chip on my shoulder and I went to a couple of acting classes only because an agent said, you're being sent out for these calls. You better go to take some acting classes. So I you know, I really didn't want to, but I did. And I found a great teacher named Robert Ellenstein, who was one of the, I don't know if you've seen North by Northwest, the Hitchcock film, but he's one of the bad guys who takes Cary Grant in the beginning. He's the one without the hat. And he did a ton of work. And his son is now also an artistic director. And he was a lovely man and a great teacher. And I just fell in love with the whole thing. So once I turned 18, I started getting sent out on a lot of calls and getting them, getting jobs. So I was able to really practice what I was learning in a studio. Because most people who are learning like in a class or, you know, you don't get to go out and then say, oh, I'm going to, today at work, I'm going to do this. But I was able to. And so you really realize it's all about thinking on your feet and being as prepared as you can be, but then just letting it go and having a good time and enjoying the people around you. And I was around a lot of people in those early days doing all this episodic television. And I really learned from them. So all I'm doing is passing along. It's just easier when people are getting along together and everybody's communicating and things aren't crazy. That's how I like to work. I don't know how you can work.
It's so much better not to work with assholes.
Well, I also think that, you know, if I was raised in an acting family and you and John were my parents, what I got from Schneider was, and I mean this in the best way, I would say this to him. Schneider came in, he was going to find a way to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
What I got from you was, okay, this is what you guys are doing. All right, I will be creative in that environment. So I think I had a good mixture of the two of you. And I don't know how I knew that. I just knew that I was pulling from both of you. And I think that's why the family dynamic did feel good to the viewers.
You know what? Also, with Annette, I will say that whenever I worked with you, and it wasn't enough, we should have had a lot more together. It was just never enough. But you were so laid back and cool and prepared and all that. But I did notice that whenever you didn't agree with something or you weren't, you would absolutely question it. You would not let it go if you didn't believe that's what you would do as an actress or an actor, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm not the outburst type. I don't do that. I don't think that, you know, I just feel like that, you know, the actor's job is to look at what the writers have given you. And, you know, I knew my place very early on in that show. And then you show up and you're a good sport. I like people who just don't make a lot of themselves, you know, don't ask a lot of questions, like figure that out for yourself. You know, it's not really the director's job, especially a television director, to tell you every single move to make. What am I thinking here? I mean, I hear people say, what? Well, no, I wouldn't do that. It's like, well, figure out why you do it. Why not? Mm-hmm. It's like a puzzle. It's a fun puzzle. And human beings are everything. Everything.
Well, I in that sense, and before we lose you, I want to tell you that there was a scene in an episode where Clark throws a party. And at the coda of the episode is Martha talking to Clark, expressing how disappointed she is in Clark.
Is it?
And I don't know if you remember this, and it's okay if you don't. But this, what was not in the scene is that Clark cries.
Oh.
And we were sitting in the Kent, kitchen. I don't know where Jonathan was. Who cares? But Jonathan's talking about, I love you. I'll always love you. But I'm so disappointed by your actions. And in the scene, I start crying.
Aww.
But I was safe with you. And we just kept going. And I have maybe not even since then ever experienced that on set.
Wow.
But it allowed me to be open to it because we just kept going. I mean, it was great. It was one of my precious moments.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. I do remember that. And I just feel that those are the times that are so important because that's what we do. In fact, Robert Ellenstein, the actor teacher I'm talking about, said, we are each other's props. You should feel so safe that the other actor is yours. You can do what you need to do and not take advantage of any. You know what I mean? It's just that freedom. That, you know, certainly people who do a lot of improvisation know that, you know, you have to buck one another up and be there. And it's like, nobody says no, nobody negates what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel is so important. And I love that when that happens. It's certainly, I've done a lot of theater in the last few years since Smallville was over. And I had before that, but I really concentrated on went to New York. And that happens a lot more because you have to. It's once rehearsals are over and you're open and you're in front of audiences, it's you and the other people on the stage. And that's what I love about that medium. It's your work. It can't be taken and twisted and made to look a different way through editing or music or all this horrible music.
That's
everything now, my God.
Yeah. You know, but also I got to say that, you're always working and you're doing such great work. Is Virgin River still going, right?
Yeah. We finished our fifth season in November.
That's amazing.
And it's fun. It's another, you know, I'm up in Vancouver again, staying in the exact same place I always stay, near Stanley Park.
I'm sorry.
But I'm being driven. I am being driven.
Wait a minute. Is that the same apartment? No.
Well, yeah, you know, there are the kind of four apartment buildings in where I'm talking about. And I've stayed in all four of them. So yeah, I'm in one of those.
I think I got high with you guys one night.
Does it sound like the Upton place?
It doesn't sound like that. No.
Okay. No.
But I've stayed there, you know, many, God, we've all stayed there a lot. No, it's an actual like corporate apartments and it's great because it's safe. I know the area. I know where everything is and where the little farmer's market is. I take different walks all over, you know, I walk constantly. So I'm all over the place. And so I'm still there. And I hang out at the library a lot. So if you're in the Vancouver library.
By the way.
From June to October.
I remember it wasn't you guys. I was high. I came high to your apartment and I was playing guitar with Michael. And I remember going, you're too high to be here. I go, I'm too high to be here. I was just like really weirded out and paranoid. And I had to leave. And I was like, and the next day I texted you. I was like, I don't know if I texted you, but I said, it was like, I'm so sorry. Was I not?
By the way, it's like everybody knows when somebody's too high, you don't tell them they're high, number one, and you help them through it. Your husband's like, get the F off.
Well, listen, we love you. We're so glad you came. Will you come back?
Absolutely, yes. Call me anytime. I've been, you know, doing all these other things, but yes, please call me back. It was so lovely to talk to you. Now you got me all excited about thinking
about
small.
And we have to get Michael McKeon, your husband, on. He was Perry White. He was on Smallville. We have to get him on too.
Totally.
Well, here's the thing, Annette. Just please let me know if you ever start a podcast. I want to be your first guest.
Well, I appreciate that. I will never start
at the library.
I don't have enough to say about anything. I really don't. You've now heard it all. But it was a joy to be here and see your beautiful faces and to have had this experience with you that we will always share and always have together. And I love you. And thanks for having me.
Oh, love you, Mom.
Bye.
See you, the mom I always wanted.
There's just this really awesome thing when you act with someone, and that kind of touched on it. There's this trust that has to happen in a scene that from that moment on, when you see that person, it's like a bond. It's like it really is. It's really cool. It's unlike what we have with Ryan, but it's similar.
Yeah, exactly. All right, here we go. This is our patron privilege. This is a top tier patron. This is Brian G. Brian G, what's your question, my brother? Let's see if it's a short answer question.
Hi, this is Brian G. How did they do that transition from Martha in the past to Martha in the present? Because that looked amazing, and it looks like a simple lighting change, but I can't imagine it's that simple.
Yeah, it was.
Please explain.
Easy lighting change. They tilt down. They have a shot of the kid, blah, blah, her hands. And then as they tilt up, it's her, but it's in the present. And then have a lighting change. Right, Tom?
Yes. I don't know.
But I mean, it's a good question. It was cool. It was very powerful, even though it was probably pretty simple. It was really effective. Didn't you think that was effective, Ryan?
I did think it was effective.
Usually what they do is they pan down and they lock the camera off. They do what they have to do to come up to the other side. And then they kind of like meld those two digitally and then they come up. And it's made to look simple, which is why it's so effective.
Mm-hmm. This is Ellis. Aaron. This is Aaron. Aaron, what's your question? And thank you for that quick question we just heard.
Hi, fellas. This is Aaron calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm loving the podcast and the weekly repartee. I met Tom at MegaCon Orlando in 2019, and Tom legit shouted at my fiance, now husband. Oh, fun story. Okay. I have a question about season 2, episode 7, Lineage. The flashback scenes from the day of the meteor shower with young Clark and young Lex. Were those scenes shot for the pilot and then cut for time? Or did you have to find the same actors to return to play young Clark and young Lex? Thanks. And hugs from snowy Minnesota. Bye.
Great question, because I have the same question. Those kids are so cute. And they had to have grown up. I don't know the answer to that. That's great. I don't know what I yelled at your fiance, now husband. It was probably, you should marry this girl because you're probably awesome. But I actually don't know. And I'm curious as well.
There's no way they shot that in the pilot. No way. No way to save it for season 2. I think that the kid probably didn't grow that. Those kids didn't grow that big in a year.
That would be an L question.
Hey guys, this is Ashley from Arkansas, and my question is for episode Lineage. What do y'all think Jonathan Kent actually said to Lionel Luther about the adoption? Like, obviously he didn't say, oh, I found him in a field. Like, what do you think was actually said behind the field or behind the scenes where they actually got Clark from for the paperwork to go through? Thank you so much.
You know what? Again, great question. I have the same question. It may have, it's knowing Jonathan, it was less than more. It was, there's this child that we want to adopt. We don't know where he came from. We found him. I'm not going to tell you how, which sounds already bad. Can you help us figure this out? I bet it was short and sweet. It was not, I'm sure it wasn't, we found him in the cornfield, but because as time goes on, Lionel would have had too much information about Clark, which also brings to mind, how come Lionel didn't move more on Clark's scenario throughout the seasons? Or tell Lex. But anyway, to you, Michael.
No, I agree with that. I think that's I think one will never know, but I assume that to make it believable, Jonathan just said, hey, we want to adopt this kid. We can't have a child. And they're like, he's like, well, why can't you go to the adoption agency? And he's like, it's not that simple. We found him and he has no owner. There's nobody. We've done the research. Owner. He's nobody's child. We've done everything. We've checked everywhere. He doesn't exist. In this town, somebody must have dumped him off in the cornfield, and you know, we would love for you to help us so we don't have to answer a lot of questions and deal with a lot of crap.
Which is such a cool juxtaposition to Lionel's situation with Lucas, where he knows all the parties involved, where the Kents come in and don't have but need Lionel's help. That's actually good drama stuff. Mm-hmm. Good questions.
Yeah. Ruben.
Hi, this is Ruben from South Texas. My question is for season 2, episode 7, Lineage. Or actually any episode that involves heat vision. Do either one of you know of any discussion or debate about changing heat vision from laser beams that could be bounced off a mirror like in Superman 2 than the actual heat waves that were used in Smallville? Appreciate your answers and keep Dogville going. I'm loving it.
Awesome, man. Ruben, thank you, buddy. I don't know how to answer that. That's a Tom question.
That was way too, like, no, I'm not that smart, Ruben, but now that you say it, you know, there's always that thing with superheroes. How come superheroes are always alone until they all come together? How come nobody really just comes to help everybody out? How come you don't use all your abilities in any given situation? I think you're right. Maybe Clark didn't have the physics teacher that he needed to tell him about heat. And I guarantee you the episode we did heat, you know, that teacher was not going to teach him about turning heat vision into laser beams.
I bet there was like a thing in like the writer's room, like on a whiteboard. They said, what are some fun things that Clark can do with his powers just innocuously? And one of them, like under like heat, like there's probably like make toast, you know?
Toast.
Hmm.
Which, I'm glad you brought that up, because when I saw that, and I don't remember really doing it, when I'm watching it, I make toast for my kids every morning. I was like, I bet that doesn't taste good. And I don't know why I felt that way. I just felt like heat vision toasted toast would have a weird tang to it.
Especially when it was coming out of your eyes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be like microwaving bread? Wouldn't it? Maybe, it was very crispy, but
Icrowave. Icrowave toast?
Yeah.
All right. Last question. This is Jerry. Hi, Jerry. Jerry!
Why does Clark always wear the same thing?
Season 2, episode 7. How did Clark hack into Chloe's email account? He usually needs her help for these type of things. And how did Jonathan lift the spaceship all by himself? Thanks.
All right. First of all, Jerry wins today. Shortest message, to the point. She got 2 questions in 13 seconds. Jerry, I love you. First of all, I asked the same question about the spaceship. How did Jonathan carry the spaceship? Maybe. Here's what I will. I'll give an excuse for this.
He was younger then.
No. When Roswell happened, the whole incident where the spaceship came or Area 51, right? It's Roswell. So they said that the material that the ship was made of was like a feather, but it could bend, it could do all these things, and it was strong. You couldn't rip it, you couldn't break it, you couldn't do anything, but it was very light material. So maybe this thing was sort of very light and manageable to put in the truck. That's A. B, what was the other one?
You're talking about the spaceship?
No, she had another question. Roswell.
I was still caught. I was trying to figure out the first answer.
She asked about the password. How did Clark have the password?
Yeah, had the password. Especially, you know, Chloe would have something that's like 5-factor.
But like in 2002, like your passwords did not need to be as complex.
Maybe just left her computer open. And I mean, when I was at Michael's house, his computer was open. I checked some emails. And the good news is it all checked out to everything you told me prior. So now I trust him.
You know what? I will say this. You let shit like that go. Stuff like that,
could have written it down on a piece of paper and he could have used some X-ray vision. Let's go with that.
But thank you. All right, Caitlin.
Michael also has this way, and not to make this an inside of you thing. Michael has a way of when he lets things go, he actually does.
Oh, yeah.
And you inspire me, because we've been talking this week about this other thing. And as much as I'm like, it's soft. I'm letting it go. It still sparks me. You have a gift and you inspire me. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, man. I try to let things go because it's out of your control. If you can't control it, let it go. Shelve it. You just have to. Caitlin, text submission. Why do you think Clark was so sure that Miss Dunleavy wasn't his mother? Was it just the ship in the cellar, or do you think something inside of him knew the truth? Thanks, guys. Great podcast. Keep up the good work.
I thought going into this, watching it, that Clark was aware that he maybe maybe I messed it up. I thought Clark knew that he came in a spaceship and Martha and Jonathan found him. I may have just been projecting that. Hmm. If you take that out of it, that's a very good question.
Rosenbaum rating, 3 roses. 2 roses, 1 rose, heater right down the middle. 1, 2, 3 bombs. We'll go to Ryan first.
I'm just one. Just gonna give.
Wow, one. You've given episodes that suck.
Yeah,
ones before.
Maybe it's because I watched this one at midnight 2 nights ago because I thought we were recording this sooner. That might be it. That's why I don't have as much to contribute today.
Okay, it wasn't that bad. 1 rose is not bad. That's good. You'd watch it.
It's a nice piece of if I had to think about it a little longer, like a nice piece of like some drama.
History.
Drama and history, not so much
action.
Rousing action.
Tom.
Okay, so 2 little things. One thing I'll say is when I'm watching episodes because the podcast is coming up and I'm watching them quickly so that at least I can talk to them, I do miss things. And the more prepared I am when I watch these episodes and I'm like on a plane or something and I'm really watching them, I get so much more out of them and I do like them more.
Right.
I'm going to give this 2.5 because just like Al said, it was the best episode of the season for the viewers. I think this is one of the shows, and this is sort of the criteria I decided upon. This is a show I could show somebody who's never seen Smallville, and I think I'd get their attention.
Fair. I thought you were going to give it 1.5 roses. Guys, I really, really enjoyed this episode.
Well, we also had Annette on here, so now I'm feeling
if you add this whole thing, Annette and Al was on here and the show.
Yeah.
But look, I'm talking about the episode. No, the episode itself, again, the pilot or finales, they're far, few and far between. Those are 3s. But I think that, you know what, Tom? It's either 2 or 2.5 for me. I'm going to give it 2. I'm going to give it 2. 2 roses. That's like a freaking great show, 2 roses. 2 is great.
It is.
Yes. Death and save count. How many people died? How many people were saved? 0 dead. 2 saved. Jonathan saves young Lex and Clark saves older Lex. Through 7 episodes in season 2, 8 dead, 14 saved. Series 38 dead, 49 saved. Ryan's favorite episode. Did you write them down, Ryan?
I did.
All right, here we go.
Where am I? This okay.
Why don't we do this before you do it? This is going to be a 2-parter. So I'm going to guess without you giving me the choices. Then Tom's going to guess, and if one of us is right, then that's it. In other words, before
scenes on our own.
Watch this. So I'm gonna go first. I think his favorite scene in Lineage was when young Clark and young Lex were in the truck with Lionel and Jonathan. That's my. What do you say, Tom? Don't say anything yet, Ryan.
I agree.
Is that your answer,
that's,
Ryan?
That's the moment. That's the moment that lives on longer than any other moment in that episode.
All right, I think Ryan, you're right. But is that the sweet answer? If not, you're going to read all 3 of them.
It's not.
It's not. All right, we're both wrong. So let's see if we have choices now. Here we go.
The flashback where the sheriff comes and they decide on Clark's name. I thought that was an interesting bit of information.
Okay.
I don't know if that was from the comics or what, or if the showrunners just decided that was it.
Okay.
Because, when Martha says, oh, it's Clark, it's my maiden name. I was like, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So mm-hmm. I was stimulated by knowledge.
All right.
That's scene 1. Scene 2 with the axe.
Ooh.
Wielding the axe.
Michael likes that one. Mm-hmm.
And scene 3 with Lionel and John signing the papers.
Huh. Tom?
Sorry, what was the first one real quick?
The first scene is...
When the sheriff comes in and sees young Clark for the first time, and she goes, his name is Clark, named after my maiden. It's my maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you say?
I'm glad that exists, but I don't think that's his favorite. I'm going to say axe.
You say the axe. I'm going to go with Lionel and Jonathan. Ryan?
Axe.
That was my favorite scene, and I should have said that. Tom has 2 in a row now. You're catching up.
It's cool. It was a cool scene.
You're catching up.
All right. That's it for the episode. We really appreciate you guys. We have a great episode next week. Episode 8 of season 2. It's called Ryan. You're in for a treat if you haven't seen it. Please go on our socials. Please write a review. Helps the podcast. Join Patreon if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/Talkville. Let us know your thoughts on the episode over on our socials at Talkville Podcast or at Talkville Pod. And you want more info like merch from the show or our hotline number, you can find all that in the description. And Tom, what should everybody always remember?
Always hold on to Smallville.
We'll see you next week. See you, fellas. Good times. All right. What would a show be without our top tier patrons being shouted out? We've got to do it, Tom, because, well, we love these folks and they make the podcast possible. So let's...
We just got a question from one today in our latest episode.
We got a couple of patrons asked some questions. I like that. We get to see their video. We get to see their sweet faces. All right, here we go. Nikki G, Leanne P, Raj C, Janine R, Santiago M, Leah S, Little Lisa, Thomas the Leaf Blower, Sophie M, Betsy D, Liliana A, Abby P, Michael H,
Ray H, Karen Apple M, Danielle B, 99 more, Liliani N,
Lalani. Why can you never get Lalani?
Lalani.
Bryce, spell it Lalani.
Yeah, let's. Can we change it for the idiot on this side? Brett G, always hold on to Smallville. Estevan G, DJ Kento, Twitch, Garrett W, Kimberly L, Justin S, Tom N, Tony V, Rodolfo V, Jason W, Osama A.
Lana rhymes with banana. We just talked to her. Lana W, Nancy D. Oh, we love Nancy D and our Brian G and our Sarah W, Justin T and Lucy O, Jeremy G, Amanda R, Teddy 127. Michael P, Ryan R, Grumpyitis, Jordan M, Hillary B, Craig G, Christy R, Pollyanna, Karen P.
Sorry, I messed up my thing for a second. You surprised me. But Karen P, Derek G, Jor L, Richard S, Heather and Greg, Nico P, I made Talkville say butts. Brian H, Eric K, Clark's mom. No. Kristen B, Takashi M, Kevin E, Nanine W, Stephanie K, and Darth Achilles.
Finky, Tito G, Mickey Trust the narrator, Stephen F, damn, who's that? Jeanette E, Devid, Allison H, General Zod, Theodore, Lucian formerly Krauk, Lucian formerly Krauk. Huh? That's Clark backwards. The Daily Planet goes to 11. Achilles R, Big D, John Glover's luscious maned, Doug R, Tommy Z Boston 68, Isabel, Cigar or Sager S, Corey L.
Wait a minute. So Lucian, former Craig, that's he just made us say more of his name.
Yeah,
That's a good idea.
What are you going to do?
Ivy and Sam, Mr. Home Arcade, Cal T, Amanda K, Jesse C, Lumberjack, Claire M, fourth favorite character, _ Zoe, we love you, Scott S, D Brown, Joshua W, Alice, be kind, please rewind.
Karen Era M, Eldon Supremo, Sarah Q2, Leslie V, Tatiana S, Robert G, Natalia G, Julie with one eye, I met you, Julie, Jules, McBurts, Ginger M, Leslie and Jordan, Oleg G, Christoph S and Katie B. And I noticed a lot of new names on there. A
lot of new fun ones.
I love
sure.
it. Thank you guys for supporting this podcast. Patreon.com/Talkville. Get your name shouted out. Support the podcast that you love if you love it. And we love you. We'll see you soon. Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, guys.